You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
Welcome to the show. Holy cow. We got a new microphone. New location at the Specialty Auto Studios, you know. We'll plug that shamelessly. But you are listening to the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker, your host. And I'm so glad to be here this week and every week. And if you want to listen, you know, to these shows again, civicmedia.us is the place to find it. All the episodes are there, including this one. And I'm super stoked that this dude is here. We got Dan Schaefer, my friend and yours. Member of the Civic Media crew here and the founder of, everybody knows, the Recombobulation Area. If you don't know it, well, you freaking should. That's what. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing well, Mark. Always wonderful to join you here on the Rational Revolution. You are one of my favorite people to talk politics with.
Oh, I'll pay you later.
This came together last minute for us to record this week, but yeah. I'm excited that we have this opportunity. There's a lot to talk about in these discombobulating times. We gotta take some time to recombobulate.
Well, I gotta say, this is the biggest Wisconsin news. Started with a profanity-laced clip from The Wolf of Wall Street and a tweet that said, "Legends don't chase, they attract."
Oh, so we're just gonna talk about Giannis and the Bucks today. Let's do it.
We gotta start there because that was big. I thought, you know, could Milwaukee love this guy even more? Ah. And then he goes and does that.
Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. And Giannis, sir, all of the trade speculation for the whole, what is it, the last 9 months of ESPN and Shams Charania and all this circus going on. And he once again survives the trade deadline and continues to be a member of my beloved Milwaukee Bucks.
Well,
you love to see it, folks. You love to see it.
And he didn't suit up that night before, whatever, and all that. So it's like he's gone. You know, people were tweeting out like thank you and appreciation and all that stuff, and then he did. So did he choose to stay, or did the Bucks, were they unable to get like a high enough price tag for him?
I mean, I'm not so you know, dialed in to say that that it's obvious that one way or the other, right? I'm not a sports reporter, so I don't really know these things, but I think the way that the reporting kind of unfolded in the weeks leading up to the trade deadline, I think there were discussions. I just think that there was nobody that was able to have any kind of realistic offer to get the Bucks interested in a potential trade package. I think if they're talking about like whether this is a realistic option, I think they're entertaining it, but I also think like they're also probably in the Bucks are also in the position where just like, you got to give us the world. You got to give us every young player draft pick that you have. Where, you know, this is still one of the best two or three players in the NBA. So, you know, it's going to take a mother load to pry him away. And I think it's always been more likely that if he does get traded, that it would happen in the off season, that it would not happen, you know, now before before the trade deadline. I think it is more likely that he would get traded in the off season, because then you'll have a bunch of teams who are, you know, competing in the playoffs. Let's say somebody who thinks they can win the title comes up short and is like, all right, we got to make a move. We got to go get Giannis. We're one player away. We can get over the hump with a trade like this. And, you know, who knows if a team like the Houston Rockets or the San Antonio Spurs or, you know, one of these teams that's kind of on the rise might want to make an all-in move for Giannis in the offseason. But I think they also, you know, maybe want to see what a guy like Victor Wembanyama can do in the postseason, in his first postseason, before they go making any big changes. So I think it's more likely that you'll see the trade speculation dial back up in the offseason. But at the same time, I think, you know, the fact that we've got past the trade deadline, it also gives the Bucks more options in the offseason too, because, you know, we've seen the Bucks make trade some future draft picks for some big names. Obviously, the Jrue Holiday trade worked out great and, yep. and led to the Bucks winning a championship.
Right. Yeah.
The Damian Lillard trade didn't work out quite so great. Did not lead to any postseason.
But
they tried. And so once they get to the postseason this year, that will unlock two future first round picks that the Bucks could conceivably trade for another, you know, secondary star, whatever it might be. They will have a draft pick this year, which is likely to be, right. you know, in the first half of the first round, based on kind of where their record is as it stands. You know, even if they sneak into the playoffs or anything like that, which still to me looks like a long shot, yeah. they'll have probably a top 15 pick in the draft this year. So you get those future picks, you get a young player, you develop some of these young guys that have emerged over the course of the season, and maybe move on with a different coach for next year. Who knows? But I am more optimistic about the Bucks, you know, kind of rebuilding a team around Giannis than maybe most people in the kind of Milwaukee Bucks fandom NBA universe. And I just, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks winning the 2021 championship is the greatest moment of my life as a sports fan. So I just want them to, I want Giannis to have an opportunity to win another one. And, you know,
do you think they can, do you think they will? What's next for the Bucks?
I think it's most likely that they won't. I mean, it's tough to rebuild on kind of a second timeline here, but I wouldn't rule it out either. Like I think, you know, the comparison that I've made is that, you know, Dirk Nowitzki made the finals in 2006, won the MVP in 2007, but then he didn't win a playoff. He only won one playoff series in the next 4 years.
Yeah, well, right.
Giannis wins, but then he goes, you know, then they build a new team around him, and then they win that remarkable 2011 finals when they beat the Heat and LeBron and all of that. So, you know, maybe it was good that Dirk stayed and rebuilt then, and maybe it's good that Giannis, even after some tough seasons in the past few years here, can rebuild for another run, maybe next year, maybe the year after. Who knows?
Yeah, it's
I'm optimistic.
Be cool. It'll be fun to watch for sure. You know, and sticking with the sports thing, are you watching the Olympics?
I have been watching the Olympics. I like the Winter Olympics a lot. I actually got in a debate with a bunch of my friends who I'm in a group chat with. I was just like, hey, you guys watching the Olympics? You know, the Winter Games are fun. Obviously not as good as the Summer Games, but I still yeah. enjoy the Winter Games. Then all of my friends who are getting back to me, they're just like, what are you talking about? The Winter Games are better. And I didn't know that, like, there was anybody in the universe who thought that the Winter Games were better than the Summer Games. I enjoy them both, but I don't know. I was surprised that there are so many people who prefer the Winter Games to the Summer Games. Where do you stand
them.
On this?
I love that because I love like speed sports. And so sure. like, you know, there's the, you know, bobsled and the luge and skeleton and short track speed skating. I love that stuff. So I think I do prefer the Winter Olympics, I think.
Do you
but
really?
Well, but then there, I mean, you know, I think baseball is going to be this or flag football. There's some really, really cool new events coming for the Winter Olympics. I like the team sports in the summer, like soccer and those types of things. But
well, you know, I mean, we just talked about the Bucks. I'm a huge basketball fan, so any of the international basketball, I'm absolutely locked in on for the summer games for sure.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, and you know what's cool about you know, to bring it into politics, that Republicans are so patriotic, they are now rooting against United States athletes.
Right.
Which is, that's cool, you know?
Yeah, and they're suddenly against certain people exercising their First Amendment rights when they don't agree with them. It's almost like they, you know, approach this in a selective way.
Huh. Which is wild. You know, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that too, because I'm trying to get an answer to a question that I don't even know how to ask.
Okay.
You know, from like the patriotic stuff that they love America so much they're rooting against American athletes. And then, you know, you look at like Bad Bunny and his Super Bowl performance, which I freaking loved. I thought it was cool. But
it was great.
You know, yeah. And then the criticism that they put out is like, you know, well, it's not about, you know, his racism thing. It's not about that. It's just, he doesn't have a lot of talent, you know? And so like they frame these in these such BS ways.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, just say the thing, you know, like it's not a double standard. Just say the thing, say what you're thinking, because it's not that.
Right. Right. It's, you know, it just, it makes me think of like those, you know, kind of the Iraq War era Republican, just like the, oh, if you don't love it or leave it, we're going to eat freedom fries, not French fries. If you say anything, yes, you're not supporting the president, like that type of pervasive, you know, attitude that was around then. And then with, you know, kind of the Sarah Palin, you know, America type, yes, of stuff, there is just this Republican approach to, well, we love free speech and we love this country and we love all of these things. And then when somebody exercises their free speech in a way that they might not agree with, oh, this person's not American, they don't love our country there. But, you know, you didn't hear that throughout, like, when Biden was president and Republicans would criticize Biden, you didn't hear people saying, oh, love it or leave it, you got to support the president, you got to love this country no matter what. Like, it's just, you know, a pretty ridiculous double standard. And it's just like the hypocrisy runs so deep with all
that.
Well,
yeah. Ron Johnson was in the news where he was criticizing Keith Ellison, who's the AG of Minnesota, yesterday. And he was
that,
like,
that was quite the exchange.
Oh, my God. Well, here's the thing. Like, I wish I was in that room, because Ron Johnson saying, can you believe you were training people how to be activists? You were training. It's like, Ron, I have been in the same freaking room as you in the Brown County Republican Party district headquarters, where we were training people to do the same freaking thing. Don't act like you're all offended and, you know, gasp and clutching pearls. You did it too, bud. Like, what is that? You believe that? Yeah, well, I believe
and
that.
Ellison,
you did
coming
it
back too. It's just like, yeah, this is your, that, yep, it's okay for people to exercise their First Amendment rights.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you have that personal history with Ron Johnson.
Oh, it's wild,
in certain ways. Yeah.
Yes. And like, it's such a hypocritical BS thing that when I saw that video, and then when Ron got his, you know, you disgust me. That was a side of Ron Johnson that I think more people need to see. I've seen it.
Hey, yeah. I was going to say, have you seen that side before?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's fun.
Just like the red-faced, angry hockey dad side of, yes, Ron Johnson. Yeah.
Yes. Right. And I always say that that Ron, he's called me a lot of things. I think he said that I was a weasel, a piece of crap, you know. But one thing he's never said about me is he's never said I was a liar. So, you know, he can, so whatever, if that's a little bit of integrity, because he knows that everything I said about him was true. Good times. We're going to talk on the other end of the break. You've covered Wisconsin politics for a while, and I want to know what you think. Where does Wisconsin actually stand right now? We're going to look into the crystal ball. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the spring election, all sorts of fun stuff. Evers in his final State of the State address. Oh my goodness.
Lots going on.
So much going on in Wisconsin politics. And you're going to hear it with our friend Dan Schaefer here on the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. We will be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. You've got Buck Becker. Yeah. Yes. On the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm so glad you're here. We are speaking with Dan Schaefer, and there's no one I think that I would rather talk to about, well, about just about everything. even Red Sox baseball, you know?
I was kind of a Red Sox fan for a little while because I loved Pedro Martinez.
He's awesome.
He was like my favorite player. And so I kind of rode the wave with those Red Sox. So I know you're always wearing your Boston hat.
Yes.
During these recordings and what have you. And, you know, we'll get you to come over to be a Brewers fan eventually.
I love the
Pedro Martinez era of the Red Sox.
Pedro was awesome. So like I started to become a fan in 2004.
Okay.
My aunt and uncle and cousin lived out there, and how could you not be a Red Sox fan when they were beating the Yankees in that
series?
Going
against the evil umpire, of course.
Yeah, so that was the gateway drug, and that stuck with me, you know, the whole time.
There you go.
Oh yeah. So you've covered Wisconsin politics for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've covered it through divided government, gerrymandered maps, and now you know the Supreme Court has flipped. I want to know. Is this a big question? Is this a transitional moment? Is this a just another stalemate? Or is Wisconsin not as purple as we thought? What do you think?
So are you suggesting that perhaps Wisconsin is a little bit bluer than the purpleness of certain elections might suggest?
Yes.
You know, I think I still think Wisconsin is as purple as it gets. And I think we are as close to the center of American politics in the state of Wisconsin that we can possibly get. We had the closest results in the 2024 election when Trump won narrowly. And then, you know, Tammy Baldwin also won the Senate race by just a hair as well. Yeah. So I think, you know, we have so many elections in our state that are decided by such close margins. You know, five of the last seven presidential elections in Wisconsin have been decided by less than 1%. That's insane. Yeah, like no other state is as close as we are, particularly in the presidential races. But like I think you're also, you know, alluding to there is that, you know, Wisconsin Democrats and democratically aligned candidates have done a lot better than Republicans over the past 8 years or so. Yes, Donald Trump won here, but I think we've seen, you know, Tony Evers get reelected, Josh Call get reelected, and the Wisconsin State Supreme Court flip in such a significant way. And with the election that we have now just less than 2 months in front of us here, there is an opportunity for the liberal aligned candidate and the liberal aligned part of the court to really grow its majority in a pretty significant way. Right now it's a 4-3, you know, Susan Crawford winning last year
by a
significant margin, cementing that. Yeah, absolutely. And cementing that in the 4-3 liberal majority. But now with Rebecca Bradley retiring at the end of her term, opening up, you know, another chance for liberals to flip a seat. And I would have to make them the very heavy favorite right now to do that. Chris Taylor, the liberal candidate, has outraised conservative candidate Maria Lazar like on a 10-1 margin. It's just not even close.
I didn't realize that.
I think there is, the fundraising game has just been so lopsided for this race. And you always expect, you know, kind of the cavalry to come to Republicans' aid in the form of Dick and Liz Uline cutting big checks as they do for, you know, Ron Johnson, for all the assembly candidates, for so many people up and down the ticket. They've kind of hung back on this one. They've spent a lot of money funding, you know, Dan Kelly and Brad Schimmel and whatnot. Haven't seen them dump the same level of funding into this one. I am expecting them to do something, but I do think it's like, I think Taylor has raised something like 3 million plus or something like that, or maybe even close to 4. And then Lazar is somewhere kicking around like $200,000. So it's just not even close. And so there's an opportunity to broaden that margin from like a 5-2 majority, which really is kind of a 5-1 Hagedorn as kind of like the swing vote for who has aligned with, you know, liberals on a number of different cases, most notably the effort to overturn the 2020 election. Hagedorn sided with the liberal members of the court there as well. So they're like, and if Taylor wins, it would mean the state Supreme Court is under liberal control until at least 2030.
Yeah.
So winning now would really, really set them up in the long term in a pretty significant way and cement that control for quite a while.
And I wondered too, like, you know, with the majority, if it flips in the legislature, what will that do to the state of Wisconsin, where people are like, oh, cool, we're now not governed by laws that were, you know, around in the 1850s? Like, you know, what will that do to Wisconsin's psyche, you know?
Yeah, I think we can talk about a little bit of that after the break. But we're looking at the first real opportunity for Democrats to win control of the state legislature in a generation.
I mean,
because of gerrymandered maps, because of like the majorities that Republicans won in 2010, you know, that led to just the outsized control of the legislature that Republicans have enjoyed for quite some time. This is the first real chance for Democrats to win control of the state Senate and the state assembly. You know, doing both would be a pretty tall task, but there is definitely a pathway for that, and for that to really upend Wisconsin politics in a really major way.
That would be wild. And I know, as we're talking with Dan Schaefer here, I know I've talked to people in the Assembly and the Senate about how they're going to have to use reach into their better angels because of how they've been treated over the last couple of decades, from everything from where their office sits to what happens when they want to get a bill passed. You know, Republicans have
even
not,
knowing when hearings are happening.
Right.
A lot of the time. Like, it's been crazy terrible. The way Robin Voss and company have run things.
Yes. So I think that's going to be really fascinating to see what happens when the tables have turned. We're going to keep talking about that here on the other side of the break with Dan Schaefer on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Mark Becker. Stick around. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Thanks for listening to those commercials. They pay the bills. Hey, that's cool. That's all good. And you're here. We got Dan Schaefer, founder, creator, extraordinaire of the recombobulation area. And we're recombobulating on where Wisconsin politics sits. And we kind of talked a little bit. And I want to get to the roundtable thing that you had, because that was really cool. But where, you know, do you think Wisconsin's opinion of politics will shift when we don't have a Republican majority in the legislature?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be Petri dish, dude.
Yeah. I think we are kind of approaching an end of a certain era in Wisconsin politics. In this era of divided government, where we had a Democratic governor and a Republican controlled state legislature, and kind of that back and forth dynamic between, you know, Tony Evers and Robin Voss in particular, over the past 8 years has really dominated our politics. And I think, you know, we're getting close to the end game for that. You know, you mentioned that Tony Evers' final state of the state address is happening next week. And, you know, the state legislature is kind of racing to their imaginary finish line to try and get as much done here in February so that they can go campaign for 9 months as they are wont to do.
Going to need it.
And they're going to need it, because I think the national headwinds being what they are. Yep. And I think that the realignment that has been unfolding in Wisconsin politics, is something that I'm going to be watching closely in terms of turnout for a midterm election, because, you know, it used to be that some of the folks who are what, you know, political science dorks like me will call those low propensity voters, used to be those voters tended to be more liberal, more voting with Democrats, particularly when Barack Obama was on the ballot. Now that has flipped, and some of those lower propensity voters, people who might not vote in the midterms, might not vote in their local elections, whatever it might be, a lot of those folks have drifted much more to the Trump version of the Republican Party in recent years. And so, you know, we talked a little bit about last year's state Supreme Court race. Now, the turnout for that was pretty close to a midterm level turnout.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And Susan Crawford won that race by a pretty comfortable margin. And if you mapped that turnout onto the 2024 results, Kamala Harris would have won Wisconsin.
Yes.
So a lot of those folks who turned out just for Trump in the 2020 election. Maybe didn't turn out in the state Supreme Court race. And it's a big question. I think maybe the big question going into the 2026 midterm elections. What was turnout going to look like on the Republican side? And with Tom Tiffany as the likely Republican nominee, how does that, is he going to deliver the type of turnout that Trump was able to deliver in 2024? And can he continue, you know, consolidating some of the support in some of the suburban counties, because he's a, you know, he's represented northern Wisconsin for his, throughout his career? You know, can he connect with the that Wow County Republican base the way some previous Republicans had as well? I think that's a big question for him.
I don't think he can.
You know? Well, you talked about how Tommy Thompson said he might struggle in those, you know, kind of the state's urban centers.
Tommy Thompson said he's going to lose.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, that's going to be fascinating to see. And another thing that was fascinating to see was something you put together. You did like this roundtable that I don't know, like for you, and then maybe a debate where you get was, all of those.
So candidate, it was a candidate forum.
Well, no, I'm saying like where the only time during this campaign where I think all of those people will be in the same room is going to be for a debate that they have. Yeah. And then you. So like,
Well,
that was a big deal, dude.
Yeah, we had the seven top Democratic candidates running for governor on stage together for the first time a few weeks ago in Milwaukee. I had the honor of being the kind of host and MC for the event that we put together with Main Street Action. Shout out to the good folks at Main Street Action and Main Street Alliance for all of their wonderful work that they do, focusing on you know, a lot of these small business kitchen table issues that are, they're such a big deal in Wisconsin. But yeah, we had that group of seven candidates: Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, State Representative Francesca Hong, State Senator Kelda Royes, former WEDC CEO Missy Hughes, former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, and former DOA Secretary Joel Brennan, all shared the stage together for the first time in Milwaukee. It was a really fascinating discussion. And, you know, I think that this is a really strong group. I mean, I've heard Republicans criticize this big field and whatever it might be. I think this is a really strong group of very qualified candidates. And I think at this moment where the Democratic Party needs to figure out its direction going forward, having a robust debate like this, I think, is a good, good thing.
Yes. What were your takeaways of it? Did anything surprise you?
You know, I think because it's one thing to see, you know, these types of primary or discussions in a primary, because they're all Democrats, right? They're all going, you know, we'll have a question about, you know, expanding Badger Care or whatever it might be. And Democrats are going to agree in broad strokes and on a lot of those issues. But I think, you know, you're going to see some of these, the details really matter in some of this. You know, we've seen that in recent weeks on a couple immigration conversations. We saw that at the forum with some of the conversations on healthcare, on childcare, what some of the very specific differences between the candidate are too. And, you know, just from my perspective too, it was really interesting to see that group of seven together for the first time, and the way some of them, you know, interacted differently to certain questions. Like there was one question that was about the manufacturing and agriculture tax credit in Wisconsin. And when that got brought up, the two, you know, state legislators, Francesca Hong and Kelda Royes, I saw them both kind of like turn in unison, recognizing, you know, what that question was going to be about, because they're just in the thick of it in the Capitol. And, you know, I think there's going to be some questions about like kind of executive experience that'll get to, you know, David Crowley or some of the other folks who have had like top jobs, Missy Hughes, Joel Brennan, you know, some of that executive experience in the race. And I think, you know, you talked to Mandela Barnes on your show within the last couple of weeks too. And you know, he obviously has a lot of that type of experience to talk about from his time as lieutenant governor and whatnot as well. So, you know, I think it's going to be, it was also just kind of fun to, you know, we had this moment right before everybody took the stage, and I just gave all of the candidates the rundown on how, you know, how the question and answer process is going to go. And it was, you know, it was kind of fun to order around the seven potential next governor for a couple minutes there. So, surreal. You know, it was a good time. Yeah.
How absolutely. Is there, would you, if you do another one, would you do anything different? Is there, you know,
Yeah, I think because this was a candidate forum and we had some of the Main Street Action members being the ones to ask the questions, we wanted to be able to give people, you know, some time to do that. But what this didn't really offer was like a debate format. This was a candidate forum. This was more a little bit more like town hall style. So you didn't have like a lot of back and forth between some of the candidates. If I were to host another event like that, I would like to see it a little bit more debate style so that we could get some back and forth and get into it, have some disagreement. Why not? Right.
Yeah, like where,
you know, there's so much to talk about. And so I'd really be interested to see, you know, some of those differences emerge and see how people would defend their positions. And you know, I think there's a lot of big issues that demand some nuance. Like I think the immigration debate, you know, we've seen that unfold. It's with some, you know, kind of higher profile interviews that some of these candidates have done on Upfront or some of the other TV networks that do some of these longer form interviews with folks. And, you know, Sarah Rodriguez said something at a recent interview where she said, talked about the way that ICE approached certain warrants. And then she, a bunch of candidates criticized her and then she walked it back. So I you know, I would want to see if we did another event like that, I would want to see some of that happen in real time. I would want to see, you know, those debates happen in person in real time and see, you know, kind of how and where and why candidates would say what they would have to say.
Someone sent me a message like, is there room for an error in this primary? And it's like, I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really, really intense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, seven qualified candidates. And I, you know, I was following some of the campaign finance reporting type stuff for the, you know, kind of first few months of fundraising for these folks and just be like, all right, did they all kind of meet a threshold where they have enough money to run a viable campaign going forward? And they did. Like each of these candidates fundraised pretty well, like, you know, some better than others. I think David Crowley topped the field. But looking ahead, you know, I think these are going to be, I think there's a good chance this is a primary all the way until August. You know, there was a event happening this week where I saw Robin Voss and some of the Democratic legislative leaders talking about the race. And Voss was like, oh, well, you know, the bigwigs will have their say, just like in 2022 when everybody dropped out and endorsed Barnes. You know, the same thing's going to happen again. And I, you know, let's overlook the fact that it just happened on the Republican side.
What's he going to say about that?
Trump endorsing Tom Tiffany and clearing Josh Shulman out of the race. I think this is going to be competitive all the way until August. I really do. I don't think we're going to see the type of, you know, people drop out when they recognize that there is a clear front runner. I don't think we're going to see that this time. I think this is going to be competitive all the way until August. And again, I will say it over and over. There are some bedwetters on the Democratic side who are very nervous about a primary. I think this is a good thing. I think this is a good thing to be in the news, to be having these conversations, and to all be able to direct their Republican criticism on one person. You're going to have seven Democrats criticizing Tom Tiffany in a myriad of ways over the next 7 months. And again, I think this is a good thing for Democrats.
I know. I'm one of those bedwetters just because of the fact that if all seven do direct their criticism to Tom Tiffany, that's great. Then it's fine. But we're seeing already some of they're not directing them to Tom Tiffany. They're directing their criticisms to each other. And I think that's tough. And if whoever's the nominee spends all their money in that primary trying to get out of a very, very competitive primary, that's going to suck.
Yeah.
That's going to be hard.
But then you've got, you know, you've got WISDems able to, if they're not, you know, picking a horse in the race, they just get to criticize Tiffany all year.
Yes.
And they, you know, Tiffany gave an interview on Newsmax this past week after Pam Bondi's disastrous congressional hearing over the Epstein files. And he, you know, she had that like viral moment that a lot of people are making fun of now. We're just like, hey, the Dow's over 50,000.
I saw that live.
Why are we talking about the Epstein files? Look at the Dow. And then Tiffany went on Newsmax and was just like, oh, I thought Pam Bondi hit the nail on the head with that. And then WISDems put out this press release calling him a few names I'm not sure I can say on the radio.
Yes.
But, you know, they're going to be able to just criticize Tiffany. He took a vote on tariffs, which are very unpopular. They're going to be able to criticize that. They're going to be able to criticize and Tiffany is just all over social media every second. They're just building the Oppo file on that. So there's going to be a lot there.
I said this to Mandela Barnes as he was on the show, and I said, like, all seven, they're going to agree on the core things.
Sure.
And if that message in November is, this guy's hurting you and I'm going to stop it. That is a very, very powerful message to be able to put out because people are feeling that.
Yeah.
They are feeling that it's hurt.
When there is a very unpopular president in the White House, it tends to not go well for his party in the midterms.
Right, right. And final thoughts just on Governor Evers' last State of the State address. What do you think he's going to say, Dan Schaefer?
You know, it's I think he'll have a lot to say, but I hope this doesn't become kind of a lame duck type year for him because of the way that the Republicans have operated in the legislature. They try to get everything done by March and then go campaign.
Yep.
What's going to happen between March and November in state government? Is he going to call special sessions? Is he going to have certain priorities? I'll be looking for stuff like that in the speech next week.
Yeah, and I do hope that history looks really, really kindly on him because he's really done a fantastic job at protecting the people of Wisconsin. Dan Schaefer, thank you so much, dude. It goes by
Mark
so
Becker,
fast.
Thanks so much for having me. Always wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk soon, and stick around for my thoughts here on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. I'm a walk, I'm a march, on the regular, painted white, black, blue. Love, forgive me, I've been running, running blind in truth.
I'm a rain on this bitter love. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Dan Schaefer, what a guy. You know, he's been through so much, you know, in terms of Wisconsin political history. He's seen so much. He's covered so much. We could talk for hours about that. But, you know, we just touched it at the end of that that last segment. If you did want to hear our coverage and our thoughts of Tony Evers' final State of the State address, we are going to talk about it. So tune in to your local civic media station before and after the Tony Evers' last State of the State address, and you'll hear me, you'll hear Dan, and we're gonna talk about it. Hear our thoughts and what Wisconsin's going to be here in these next couple of years. So again, thank you so much to Dan Schaefer. I talked a little bit about this, but I got to hit it. I got to talk about this. Is what everyone's talking about, the most controversial, the most polarizing halftime show since Janet Jackson showed everyone in America. You know what happened in that one during the Super Bowl halftime show. It was Bad Bunny and his performance during the Super Bowl halftime show. By the way, said God Bless America more than Kid Rock did. So, that's awesome. Good for him. But I thought that it was incredibly entertaining. It was really, really cool. There were people on that I saw on my Facebook because I mean, I'm friends with a lot of people on both sides and who said they didn't like it and couldn't understand it or whatever. And I kind of wanted to unpack that a little bit because, there are times where in art or in music and whatever, people will say, I didn't like it because I couldn't understand it. And I want to be very clear that, if we're framing our argument or our counterpoint or whatever, it's okay to say you didn't like something because you couldn't understand it, right? Like, I get that. There's a rock band. I love music. And there's a rock band called Rammstein. And they play some really cool music. But they sing in German. And even though I took, some classes in German in high school, I still couldn't really understand what they were saying. And so, I can appreciate the music. I can listen to it. But then after a while, it's like, okay, that's enough of that. And it's not racist to say that. It's not racist to say, well, I just couldn't understand it. It wasn't for me. That's fine. I couldn't understand what Bad Bunny was saying. But what was cool about what he did was the music itself was incredibly catchy and you could, dance along to it. My daughter was just going nuts and she loved it. We all loved it. But also the symbolism that he had in that performance made it so you really didn't have to understand what he was saying. From things like, you know, the sugarcane fields and performers dressed up as rural farmers wearing the traditional hats carried such deep cultural weight. You know, Ricky Martin didn't perform one of his own smash hits. He sang a song that framed Hawaii as kind of a cautionary tale to Puerto Rico about over-tourism and gentrification, you know, like bringing rich people into poor areas. It was fascinating. The electrical poles that were sparking, very stark representation of like the fragile power grid that Puerto Rico has from Hurricane Maria, which is hilarious because then they're like Laura Loomer was watching that show and not watching the Turning Point USA, and she was like, you know, he really could have used this moment as a time to highlight the power grid that Puerto Rico is having issues with. And it's like, yo, girl, that is the thing that he was doing, right? And so that it was amazing, and it was so good. And, but then, you know, to see people explain their dislike of the performance as like, it's talentless, it's boring, and saying something like how his music was crude or offensive, and like completely ignoring the crude and offensive language that Kid Rock had, you know, it's, but, you know, saying, oh, you can't understand it, but then you can understand it enough to say how offensive it was. Weird. You know, it's just kind of strange. You know, it's wild. And it's even more wild when I did watch a little bit of the Turning Point show. It was after the fact. And I Lee Bryce was singing. It kind of summed up the show in a song that he sang, where the lyrics were, I just want to cut my grass, feed my dogs, wear my boots, not turn on the TV, and watch the evening news and be told that if I tell my daughter that little boys aren't little girls, I'd be up a creek in hot water in this cancel your boop world. It ain't easy being country in this country nowadays. What stirring lyrics, you know? And it's like, that's it. You know, that just encapsulates what that was. It encapsulates the idea that, you know, you're so offended by someone who doesn't speak your own language that you have to create your own halftime show and then create your own bubble about it, saying, oh, this isn't a political thing. And then you have a guy who's singing about, I just want to hold my bigoted opinions and not have anyone hold me accountable to it. Ooh, it's so hard to be country in this country. Just say the thing, you know? And that's what's so pathetic about it, is like, it's lies wrapped in lies, wrapped in, you know, some stupid, I don't even know what it is, but it's not patriotic. And I thought that Bad Bunny and his performance was way more patriotic than anything that Turning Point USA put on that day. And I'm proud of what they did. And that is what made me proud of this country. Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Rational Revolution. Stick around next week. We got a heck of a guest for you as well. But as always, visit civicmedia.us for this episode, all the other episodes, and tune in every week like I love that you do. I'm Mark Becker for the Rational Revolution and the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you next week. Open the streets and watch our beliefs. And when they carve my name inside the concrete, I pray it forever. Freedom, freedom.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.